Welcome to episode 136 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I chat with Jeremy McPeak about Super Bowls and Phoenix Suns.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who is actually taller and younger on the internet, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I do keep saying I am younger on the internet, and the internet is being kind. But I don't know if I'm actually taller these days. I might actually be shrinking. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. You're either doing that on sportsgeekhq.com, on iTunes, or on my favorite Pocket Cast app. You reckon I would get that right after so many takes, wouldn't you, Brew? You can contact me, Sean, at sportsgeekhq.com, or you can do it via the very many channels I'm available on, at Sean Callanan on Twitter, on Instagram, Snapchat, and most importantly, in the Sports Biz Slack community. If you haven't signed up, I please implore you to do so. Just go to sportsgeekhq.com/Slack and sign up. There's nearly 700 people now in that group. Really pleased to finally get Jeremy McPeak on the podcast. Way back in the days when I was doing the show with Francis Leach on ABC Grandstand, we had a misconnection. Tried to get Jeremy on the show, and we've never been able to get back since. So I'm really pleased to get him back on the show. He has a long history with his work at the Phoenix Suns, and now he's gone off taking the entrepreneurial leap to form Jeremy McPeak Communications. So I have a great conversation with him about his time at the Suns, but also in his current role, his really important role as social media QB for the Houston Super Bowl Committee, managing all the different social channels for Houston Super Bowl, H-O-U Super Bowl, for all of those handles across all the platforms. So here is my chat with Jeremy McPeak. Very happy to welcome someone that I met many years ago, and we have been trying to organise this podcast for many years. The artist formerly known as Suns Webmaster, Jeremy McPeak. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me. And I have not heard that name, Suns Webmaster, in many years. So it has been a long time. We've been trying to connect.
Yes. So for the backstory, and I think I have used that line a few times. I started Sports Geek back when people were webmasters, and you were always the person that I pointed to. But that was your original Twitter handle, wasn't it? Suns Webmaster.
It was, yeah. I actually changed my Twitter handle a couple times. At some point, I went to J McPeak, and then I actually was able to negotiate with the person who had my first name, Jeremy, J-E-R-A-M-I-E. And so I've been – that's been my handle for the last probably 4 years now, I guess, at Jeremy.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get my – handle Sean Callanan, but I'm part of the multi Twitter handle account on the Sports Geek. I think the Sports Geek initially was _SportsGeek_, worst Twitter handle ever. It went from that to Sports Geek HQ, and then lucky enough caught up with Laura King in 2010, and she said, "Yeah, well, we should be able to get Sports Geek," and she decided to swap the handle over while I was in flight from LA to Melbourne. So I landed and my Twitter handle had changed. I'm like, oh, that's a really nice surprise, and did the whole better secure the old one in case people are going to the old one. But funny doing the Twitter changes. So for people who don't know you, obviously the reference to the Suns, you had a long career at the Phoenix Suns, and you've recently left the world of the NBA. Do you want to give people a little bit of background on your NBA digital career?
Yeah, you bet. I started with the Phoenix Suns back in 1992, just a few months after Charles Barkley arrived. And I spent 24 years with the organization. When I arrived, we didn't even have digital or website or anything, any social media. So kind of grew up with that and really learned it along the way, fell in love with it. And over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been doing some social media consulting and digital consulting in my spare time and thought, you know, eventually I may want to go out on my own and do that full time. Now, my wife wasn't quite as crazy about that idea. She was a little nervous about the idea of not having a guaranteed paycheck every 2 weeks. But eventually I decided it was time to move on and still love the Phoenix Suns. They will always be home and I will always bleed purple and orange. But I'm really enjoying my new entrepreneur life right now. And I've got 6 or 7 clients, including the Houston Super Bowl host committee. I'm managing all of their social media channels and working with a couple sports teams and a sports league and some sports executives and also a couple of different vendors. So really enjoying working with different clients and getting a chance to share the experience that I gained over those 24 years with the Suns.
And that's the thing, you were really on that that ground floor. I met you back in, I think it was 2010 when you came out to Melbourne for a conference.
Yeah, that's right.
And, and I love the story. I think you told the story then was when you found out about the NBA was going to have a website via a fax. And you know, that's how long ago it was. And so you sort of grew up learning that digital space because you came from a journalistic background. You were a contributor and writer of the Hoop magazine, an NBA magazine, and so you had that journalistic, which a lot of my guests have been journalists first, and then lent into the digital side, and then you've grown up as social gets added and all the innovations in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right about that story. I was in our PR director's office. And she received the fax from the NBA telling all the teams that they were going to be launching this new portal on the information superhighway, and every team was going to be responsible for a page. And she skimmed over the fax and handed it to me and says, "I don't know what this is. Why don't you do this?"
And, again, and so, it's exactly this. It's almost exactly the same thing as when another platform comes out and you go, "We don't have the resources. They want us to do a whole page." I'm sure that's what it would have been. Right. It's exactly that's the right. same as happening now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I took it and kind of ran with it. And I guess it took me a while to run with it because, as you mentioned, I was a journalist, was a writer. In fact, I still write for the NBA today. I just wrote an article for the NBA All-Star program for this year, finished that up last night. But wrote for about 20 years for different national sports magazines here in the U.S., but really just fell in love with the digital side. And for me, it's all about storytelling, whether I'm writing an article, whether I'm working on a video for a website, whether I'm doing social media, podcasting, whatever it is, it's all about storytelling. And if you're a good storyteller and can communicate clearly and effectively, I think it really helps you in this space.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, what has happened over the past 7 or 8 years is that you've now just got more brushes in your toolkit to tell that story, you know, whether it be written, audio, video, social, the different graphic elements. It's just become more complex. But the idea is you still got to go back to that telling of a story.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can tell it in so many different ways. And most of those ways are on your phone now, of course. But you know what's funny is I find it a little more difficult now to write the 2,000-word feature story, the one that I just finished for the All-Star program. It took me a lot longer than it used to back in the day because I'm used to writing 140 characters at a time now instead of 2,000 words. So I need to get back in the practice, I guess, and write a little more frequently so I'm not so rusty.
Yeah, it's very hard to be pithy in 2,000 words. You're trying to,
it is.
I mean, Twitter and it really does sharpen your writing because you've got to get your point done in a sentence. But you're right, when you have to then unpack that and be more verbose and dive in a bit more of the detail and describe more things, you go, "Oh, hang on, I haven't done this for ages." So it is a bit, it is a bit foreign, but it is also shows that it also is a reason behind the success and of longer form stuff, like the fact that we're getting so much short form snackable media now that you're people going, "Well, there's only so much," to use the food analogy, Chinese food, it's not filling, I want a really big meal. That's why they go to the longer form stuff, the 7-minute reads or the 10-minute reads or the the 45-minute podcasts. So it's sort of, you've got to have that balance between that short form stuff, which is easier potentially produce. You still got to, it still takes the same amount of creative power, but yeah, the long form stuff still has very much has a place.
Yeah, no question. I completely agree with that. And I am a diehard social media guy. I'm on social all day long, but I still get the newspaper at home and I still get magazines, and I love to sit down and read a 5 or 6 page article that takes me 15 minutes to read. There's something about it that really can give you so much more information and go so much more in depth on a story and really bring you into the story itself and really paint a picture for you of what the person or the subject of the article is about.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for print magazines to put, byline and then say 10 minute read. because people are, time is so precious. I need to know, I don't know if I can commit 7.5 minutes.
Yes, you can.
It's only a matter of time. So I want to talk to you about the Houston Super Bowl. I was lucky enough to talk to Brad Main when he was at MetLife, when they had the Super Bowl, and some of the logistics for Brad in running the stadium and the issues that they had. And the issues they had with the snowstorm coming, and almost, it was a blizzard, and was it going to really affect the game, and all the contingencies, and how, digital and things played a part, just the operationally. And luckily enough, if you go back and listen to it, episode 62, the storm abated enough to the game would happen, and then the storm came, and the stadium was covered literally 5 hours after the game.
Yes. Yes, we barely dodged it.
barely. I don't think those problems will hit Houston, unless some weather freakish weather pattern sort of hits. What does your role entail with Houston and, in this social media QB role?
Right. So I joined the host committee in September. So I've only been with them now for about 4 or 5 months. But my role really has been to manage all of their social media channels, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, previously Vine, Snapchat, Periscope. So really I'm doing daily updates. I have been doing daily updates on all of their channels over the last several months, from my home in Phoenix for the most part. I've gone out to Houston a couple times, and now I'm currently in Houston for these 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, so that I could cover everything on the ground in person, in real time. But really it's been just keeping all those channels updated, and that includes letting fans know about the events that are coming up, letting them know who the performers are going to be at the concert stages at Super Bowl Live, the big fan festival in downtown Houston. But it's also been about showing all the community involvement that the host committee has had. They've had book drives and given out 5,100 personal libraries of books to kids throughout the Houston area. They've done all kinds of tree planting, working with the NFL and their environmental programs to really leave a green legacy on the city of Houston. They've had leadership academies with former NFL players coming back to share their stories of success, not only on the field, but in life. So I've been sharing all those stories through social media, but at the same time trying to really engage with sports fans in Houston to get them excited about the game and all the events coming to Houston, and also NFL fans and NFL teams and NFL media just around the sport itself to connect with them, let them know we're active on social media, so hopefully they'll follow back and engage with us, which they have been over these couple weeks leading up to the game. And so it's been a lot of fun as a big sports fan and football fan myself. I'm getting paid to be on social media and talk about football. So it's a great job, and it's been a lot of fun working with the host committee. There's a lot of good people there. And I got a chance to do the same thing for Arizona back in 2015. I actually was with the Arizona committee for 18 months leading up to Super Bowl 49. All in my spare time while still at the Suns, but just really love that environment. And it's all a team of people from different areas and different industries all coming together to really help make sure it's a fantastic event for the city, and really puts the city in a good light for all the fans coming in from other locations. And of course the huge television audience that's going to be watching the game here at NRG Stadium.
And the thing is, because I mean, effectively, there's this pop-up organization, the Super Bowl Organizing Committee.
That's right.
You know, for the people who don't know, the cities and that will bid for the Super Bowl. Houston would have won it 3 or 4 years ago, would have been announced. They would have bid 3 or 4 years ago, and then they would have started putting in their plans to make sure their stadiums are up to speed, that they've got enough hotels, all of those things. And then effectively they set up all these social channels. The one thing, you know, and you've had experience with 49 and now this would be 51, yes, 51?
Yes, that's right.
Well, the one thing that I do find, and again, it's not, is that there's not handles that are handed down and that are handed down from committee to committee. So I guess an example is Shane Harmon when he was with the Rugby World Cup, rather than building out one for the New Zealand Rugby World Cup in 2011, they just built out an asset that was Rugby World Cup, and then they handed it on to the next to the next venue, which was London, I believe. But you've got but Houston is they're all its assets. You're building up all these assets, and there's not that handover of all the assets.
No, that's true. You're absolutely right. The NFL itself does have a Twitter handle called @SuperBowl, which they use year over year to talk about the events going on in the particular city, but really to hype the game itself.
Yep.
So the committees create their own handles, which they use really to focus on everything that's going on in that city. So I completely understand the question and the thinking behind handing it over to the next committee, but when such a large percentage of the followers are based in that particular city, so for us, you know, a good majority of our followers are from Houston or surrounding areas, it wouldn't necessarily make sense for us to hand those over to Minnesota for next year's Super Bowl, because now they're communicating with people that aren't in their city and won't be attending their events. So,
So it's very much a focus around, you know, because the committee are built, they're built to provide financial impact to the area, to bring financial impact into Houston and results, and that's part of the reason of the bid. So then the social strategy and the digital strategies is aligned with that to say, well, we want people of Houston, whether they're going to the game or not going to the game, to feel good, to participate, to feel like they've participated in the Super Bowl, even if they haven't turned up to the game, by going to the fan festival or seeing the teams arrive or seeing our community involvement. So it's very much a local engagement piece. You're not there to do the Oreo tweet and get real national exposure. You're more focused on engaging Houston.
Certainly for the buildup to the Super Bowl, yes. These last couple weeks, obviously, we're engaging with the two teams and their fan bases, as well as all NFL fans that are interested in the Super Bowl. But certainly in the buildup, in the months leading up to the event, it's really about hitting the home market and getting them excited and letting them know what's coming and how they can get involved.
And so for a while there was a and I've read multiple articles around the Super Bowl and the trend around having a command center. Will you have a command center? Will there be, because there's that customer service element of, oh, there's an issue over there. Is that something that flow has to come through you to alert people that there's parking concerns, or how is that going to? Because that's a really big part of these massive events. You know, we're seeing now at the Australian Open, they have multiple handles. One of the handles is AO Help. And so if you have any problems, you tweet that rather than tweeting the Australian Open handle. How do you handle customer service in that sort of space?
Yeah, we also have a social media command center going on right now with a whole team of volunteers and listeners and captains who are all keeping an eye on tweets that are coming into our handle.
Yep.
At HOU Super Bowl, just the normal handle, and also people that are tweeting at Super Bowl, the NFL's handle, and they are responding to any questions, any concerns, whether that's about traffic, whether that's about weather, whether that's about tickets, whatever it is, there's a whole team of people that are trained and have a lengthy FAQ list that they're using to respond to those people in a customer service fashion. Well, I am out covering all the events myself in real time, providing on the ground coverage, photos, videos, live streaming through Facebook Live and Periscope, really giving all of our followers the flavor of what's going on in Houston.
So it's very much that, and it is something that when you've got a big account and you've got a lot of questions and queries and mentions coming in, it's very hard to be in broadcast mode, which is what you are. You're out there covering the event, sharing the event, amplifying the event, and you need someone else to be monitoring the mentions and backwards. So you sort of have that delineation of tasks to say, I've got my command center listening, checking on things, replying to things that need to be replied to. So you don't have to be, you know, when you're in broadcast mode, you don't have to be looking at that, knowing that that part has been handled.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be very difficult. You know, there's 100 different events going on in Houston these last 10 days. And I'm working, you know, 12 to 15 hour days racing from one event to the next, shooting photos, shooting video, trying to edit things, trying to post it on all the different channels. I'm lucky if I even get a chance to look at the notifications and see how people are responding to the content, let alone stop and have to think about how to answer certain questions or put someone in touch, you know, with someone from the city or an official that can answer the questions. So it really is helpful to have that command center and that large team of people that are volunteering to help provide all that customer service for the fans.
And you need it, and you need it more on multiple channels, because I would have thought, you know, from 5 or 6 years ago when Twitter was the main and still remains, you know, the real heavy complaint channel, it's a very easy channel to complain on. More and more people will be doing that also on Instagram by taking a photo of a long line or complaining about something there, and it's another place that brands, especially in this type of environment, a big event, it's something you've really got to be on top of. It's harder to do in the you know, the big professional sports sense, but when you've got a focused event like, you know, the 3 weeks around a Super Bowl, it's something you want to try to do your best to address. And platforms like Instagram will be really big, but also, you know, you put up a post on Facebook, and if someone's got a complaint, then they'll just reply on that post. So it's, you know, the volume of information coming in makes something like, you know, having volunteers in a command center absolutely vital.
Yeah, no question. And it's not even just complaints, but it's also those questions. People leave the questions in the comments on our posts on Instagram. They're sending direct messages through Twitter and Instagram. They're, you know, sending us messages in our Facebook mailbox. They're posting on comments. So, yeah, it's really keeping an eye on all those places and just continually skimming them, looking for the questions that we can answer and help people out.
Why can't they just ask in the one place and make it easier for us? That's what I ask. You know, come on, people, get your act together. So that's the customer service and the engagement side of things. So from your storyteller point of view, what are you looking to do? How are you looking to, you know, is there anything particular you're looking to do on particular channels that you want to sort of test things out? Because, again, it's a bit like, you know, when you were at the Suns, you have an 82-game season, you can go, oh, well, I'm going to test this out and see how this works. And it does okay on a Monday night, and you try it again on a Wednesday and tweak it a little bit. But there's a little bit of you've got one shot at this, you know, if I don't have the Eminem music in the background. But it's like you don't get to make it better and do the tweaks. Are there particular things you want to try to tackle and have a go at?
You know, I would say there probably won't be a whole lot of experimentation or hasn't been. I'm really relying on my own years of experience, having done this not only for the Arizona Super Bowl, but the NFL Players Association. I did some work for a couple years, and then of course all my work with the Suns and the Phoenix Mercury of the WNBA. So I'm really relying on that experience and kind of knowing and trusting my gut on when to post things and which channels to use and what to try. I would say the things that are a little different since the last Super Bowl I worked are the live streaming capabilities now. Both Twitter and even Instagram and Facebook have the ability to stream live. So I'm taking advantage of that and trying not to overdo it and not stream from every event and stream for long periods of time, but give fans a real inside look into what's going on and let them get a feel for the activities and the energy and the buzz here in Houston. So that's something new that I'm having fun with. And then also I picked up a pair of Snapchat spectacles. So I guess that's a little bit of an experiment since I hadn't used those before, and just received those before my trip here to Houston. And I'm having fun kind of giving that first person perspective on all the activities going on throughout the streets and in all the different neighborhoods in Houston.
And is there, you know, the Super Bowl is one of the biggest TV properties in the world, and one of the issues, whether you're in pro sports, is that dance between social, these live video platforms and video overall. You know, we saw earlier in the year that the NFL went, you know, dropped the ban hammer on GIFs and video, and you know, we really felt for our NFL comrades in that sense when they really had restrictions put on them from a social. It's loosened a little bit. But obviously there's restrictions on what you can and can't do around game day. But are you able to be able to do video outside the event and in the lead up and not really have many restrictions in that space?
Yeah, there are some guidelines that we need to follow, of course. But I would say that most of the things that we are live streaming from on any of those channels are our official host committee events, like Super Bowl Live presented by Verizon, which I mentioned in downtown. So those are our events, and there aren't the same guidelines there that there would be or will be at the stadium, of course, on game day. And, of course, I would never try to stream from there, as I know that's a – you know, not allowed, as you mentioned, but there's lots of other ways that we can push content and grab quick video clips and boomerangs and hyperlapse and you know, be able to still post some fun content on all the different channels that our fans can enjoy.
And the thing is, you know, even from you know, your experience in Super Bowl 49, like the evolution of Snapchat and the stories and the storytelling capability of Snapchat in that Snapchat story, you have a real opportunity to tell a, you know, super epic, this is what the day was like, mixing your, you know, spectacles behind the scenes, pictures, just from the steering committee's point of view, but then also, you know, but then also you'll also be able to see what the fans, you know, when Snapchat drops the filter on and gets all the snaps coming in from the stadium. It's an absolutely epic way to, and a different way to watch a game. So that's what I'll be tuning in to see what your Snapchat story is on the day. And that people will be able to go and check Snapchat, and check it out. But it's such a good storytelling platform to say, you know, cause you'll be there at, you know, so, you know, 5 or 6 AM or something stupid in the morning to get set up. And most of the fans don't know what's happening in an NFL stadium on Super Bowl, on the day of a Super Bowl, and you'll be able to take a few of those snaps.
Absolutely. Not only the Snapchat stories, but the Instagram stories as well. So we have an even bigger audience on Instagram than Snapchat right now. And so we'll be using Instagram stories in a very similar way, but we'll try to mix everything up so you're not getting the exact same pictures and story if you're following on both channels.
It is the case, and it was one of my sort of looking at trends that are, you know, that are currently out there in the current battle and the I'll copy that sort of battle that Snapchat and Instagram are having, and the recent stats from Instagram stories saying, you know, how many people are watching them. Obviously, Instagram's coming off a bigger base, and it's being really well adopted by fans. Is it something that, do you have a preference, or is it a bit of, oh, they're both really killer platforms, I've got to be on both, and like you just said then, I don't want to put out the same story on both channels because then there's no value in being on both channels.
Right. Yeah, I think both are valuable for sure. I'm a little biased towards Instagram. I like it a little better, but maybe that's because I'm old. But I'm certainly using. I'm certainly using both and enjoy both. And I think there's probably some overlap in audience, but I also believe that there's probably a lot of people that follow us on Snapchat that don't follow us on Instagram and vice versa. So it is important for us to be in both places. And I think stories have been a perfect way to really tell the daily stories leading up to the Super Bowl. Every day we're posting different stories of all the stuff that's going on from Super Bowl opening night at Minute Maid Park, to Super Bowl Live, presented by Verizon, to the actual team practices, to the teams arriving at the airport. So we're giving fans a look into the full day, every day leading up for these last 10 days or so.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the Instagram stories versus, Snapchat stories, I think for, Instagram to a certain degree is doing a killer job, but it's also training people on what Snapchat is. And so that older demographic can go to Snapchat and realize, oh, that's what it is. But then again, you talk to someone between 18 and 24 and they don't use stories. They just use messages and that's how they use it. So it's sort of understanding that. I think a big change that recently came out on Android, and I'm hoping for your sake that it comes out on the iOS, is that Snapchat now has search. So someone can just go to Snapchat.
I read about that. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So they'll type in Super Bowl and they should find the Snapchat handle. What's the Snapchat name for the – is it HOU Super Bowl?
That's right. It's the same handle for Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
So that's the thing. So that's what held a lot of, and we'll put our hands up, older generation, to understand Snapchat. But if they can go in and type Super Bowl and it lists the two teams that are involved and it lists, the accounts that you should be following and it lists the NFL account, well, then you go, oh, now I've figured it out. And so that one potentially, we saw, I think it was last year, Snapchat did a deal with the NFL it was one of their first times that they did an advertising deal with the story and the Snapchat story around the Super Bowl. Again, there's a real big opportunity for them to both grow, but I don't think Zuck's going to take that type of challenge lying down. They'll look to throw something out. No doubt you'll open up Instagram and it'll all be about the Super Bowl on Super Bowl Sunday. they'll most likely be doing that. Other trends, Vine has recently been closed down by Twitter. It was well loved.
I was sad about that.
Loved in the NBA community. What's your take of where that's headed? I mean, it's effectively getting embedded into Twitter. It's not. It's not being completely killed off, but it's just not its own community anymore. Have you got any thoughts on the, I guess, recent changes at Twitter, some of the things that they've gone about doing, shuttering Vine? They've recently sold their development platform to Google, and there's this bit of a dark cloud around it. What's your take on where Twitter's headed?
It's a good question. I mean, there's certainly been a lot of rumors that they are up for sale and they're looking at potential buyers. So I would not be at all surprised if they are sold here soon, if they're not by the time this podcast airs. But yep. So it's a little hard to know where they'll go with a new ownership group. But I think it's still certainly the best channel out there for getting kind of real-time news when there's a big world event going on or when there's a sports game or Academy Awards or whatever it is. That's still the channel where most people go to talk and share their information and share their thoughts. So I think it's going to be valuable, and I think it's going to be around for quite a while. But I certainly think the closing down of the Vine community was a sign that they were trying to probably save some money and consolidate some things and make their books look a little better for potential buyers. And I was sad to see it go. I really enjoyed Vine. And, of course, the camera app still works, and you can still post those into Twitter, which is really where your followers are anyway. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that were actively spending time on a daily basis going to Vine. But so at least the tool is still there and usable, and that's certainly important.
And I think there's been a lot of, going back to those, a lot of long posts on all the things that are wrong and that. But I think one of the main thing is talking about Instagram and Snapchat earlier, they are innovating and bringing out changes almost monthly or almost fortnightly. That like they're rolling out new changes all the time. And Twitter for a large part hasn't changed a lot. In the last 6 or 7 years, that there hasn't been that innovation in the product to say, oh, it's vastly different, or this is what it is. So I think making big decisions like Vine. I mean, when they purchased Vine and they purchased it before it was launched, I didn't understand why it was its own thing. If they'd have just put it straight into Twitter, they would have been the first platform with video straight into the feed. Yeah, but they went, you know, and so making those decisions, you know, and that's taken them 4 years to come back to that decision. So I think if they do more of that stuff, and the fact that, you know, now Periscope is embedded, it's, you know, you just hit the button and you go live. So
right.
It is very much a media platform. It is very much where news is. So they've got the people there. They haven't got the growth, and they've still got to figure that piece out. And the ad product, which is what's powering Instagram and starting to power Snapchat, is sort of where they've got to figure out how it works for people, because, you know, they're recently shutting down the buy button that they rolled out, where you could roll a product at.
And that surprised me.
That surprised me as well, because, it makes perfect sense. You know, the Super Bowl victory, you know, someone wins, and why wouldn't you roll out a tweet that says click here and buy the hat?
Right.
But, again, from an execution point of view, it didn't quite go well, but, you know, we've seen them move more into the media space, and I think as someone who works in sports, I think them being a media player and buying rights like the NFL rights brings other parties to paying money and bringing revenue into sports, whether it's Facebook bidding for content rather than just asking sports to be on their great platform, and Snapchat the same. So I think some of the agitating they're doing in the media space is good. So I'm the same. You know, I made a stack of terrific connections via Twitter and met some awesome people. I really do want them to get their shit together, and so we can still be tweeting in many years to come. So I wanted to finish off you're a long time at the Suns, and a lot of times when you're working in the world of sports, you have to be very adaptable, very, very ready for change, handle big news, whether it's a massive trade coming in and you have to rally the troops and get your team out to push the content out. Recently, we saw the San Diego Chargers literally overnight up and move to Los Angeles. And I think it was over 3 days we saw three different LA Chargers logos come out. And I really felt for the team, you know, because it did really look like the owner said, we're going to LA, and like you got the facts saying, hey, build us a new website. It was like someone was told, oh, we're going to LA, give us a logo now.
Right.
And now you were with the Suns, stable situation and ownership and things like that. If you would have got that that call, how do you handle that kind of thing? And then how do you handle the ongoing piling on of the internet when, you know, you put out a logo that everyone has a go at and trying to fix that? Because it would have been a super high pressure situation for the digital team. And then on top of that, they're looking at the social channels, getting an absolute pounding from all the San Diego fans. So you're managing crisis comms, but you're also, this design dilemma. It's a bit of a nightmare, but how would you handle something like that?
You know, yeah, I feel for them as well. That would be a very stressful situation. Not only all of the, you know, abuse that they're taking on their social channels and online, and being, you know, the butt of jokes regarding the logo, but I'm sure a lot of them don't know if they're going to have jobs anymore moving, you know, whether or not they're willing to move to LA, whether or not they're going to be wanted to move to LA. You know, I'm sure that there's a lot of stress there that we don't even realize that they're under. So I would hope that if I was in that situation and it came about, I would just be as professional as I could and do the best job I possibly could with it. Try not to take the personal or not to take all of the jokes and the comments online personal. And I've certainly had to deal with that. My last 6 years with the Suns, they missed the playoffs, and there were a couple years there that maybe trades didn't go the right way, or there were coaches that were fired that fans were upset about. And so we took a lot of abuse through social, and it is hard to not let that get to you at times. Yeah. But you have to try to remember that those are just passionate fans voicing their concern, and they're not really mad at you personally as a human being. And so you try to take it in stride and just be as professional and classy as you can and do the best job you can. But at the same time, you know, I'd probably be putting out some feelers, to my network to see what other opportunities there might be for me if I'm not going to end up making the move to LA with the franchise.
I mean, I think, you know, other – like they just kept the main thing is for mine, less is more. Like, so if you know, the internet, the outrage in the internet only lasts for 12 hours.
Right.
So, and you know, it's just the fact that they changed it three times that they got 36 hours out of it, but the internet will find something else to be angry about in time. So it is just a matter of making the change and moving on and letting people go. The other side of the double whammy of handling the abuse and also not knowing whether you've got a job, that's where I felt for them.
Absolutely.
It is definitely from, you know, one of the services I offer for all of my clients is when they're in that space, when they are reading all of those posts, and you're right, it is really hard not to take it on board because you have, you know, you have passion, you know, whether they're talking about a coach that you know right. personally and you consider a friend, or a player that you know is battling, you know, that they don't know has come back from injury, or they don't know the backstory. And so you start taking it on, and you know, I say to my clients, if you ever feel the urge to reply to any of those fans in a way that you shouldn't reply, send me a text with all the worst swear words you know, and it gets you out of your system. And then I just reply back, say, thank you, I like you too. In 10 minutes, you can go back to your computer. And it just gets it out. So you need to find some release in that sense, because it is just, you just got to step away from it. But yeah.
Now I understand why Sports Geek is so successful. That's a brilliant service to add, and I may have to copy that with my company.
Yes. No, the phrase we use is steal with pride.
Sounds good.
So occasionally I get an abusive text, and then I have to correct myself. Oh, that's why I said that they can do that. But you do have to realize that, yeah, don't take it on board. And, yeah, you know, and the easiest thing to do on the internet is to make fun of logos, changes, or whatever. But sometimes just let the time go, because, you know, the charges put their one out, which was a really, you know, you knew. And I was talking to marketing people who were like, why didn't they get a brand agency involved? Why did it take, you know, why would they make a mistake like that? And I said, because most likely the owner kind of went and told everyone, we're moving to LA, and someone said we better change the logo. And that's how it would have happened.
Yep,
like, and it's sport is, you know, professional sports probably one of the only industries where that happens. But even then, when you do bring in a brand, and recently Juventus brought out a really new, fresh, bold new logo with an awesome video, brand video attached, but because it was changing the history of a, you know, 100-year-old football club, they got the same amount of vitriol and negative feedback, and because fans don't like change at all.
Right.
You can have the best logo in the world and you're still going to get that. But what I have been watching is that I posted on my LinkedIn and some really good discussion about the Juventus logo in the sports biz Slack. But, you know, 24 hours later and, 36 hours later and, 2 days later, the fans have come around because they've been told the story. But the initial reaction will always be, I hate it. It's terrible. I want my old one back.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if you go down the path of bringing in a big brand agency and having the best marketing minds in the world and design minds in the world come up with a logo, you know, there's not too many. You can go through sports history and new logos, and you probably went through a few logo changes at the Suns. There'll always be people, oh, it's terrible. I hate it. I like the old one. Because nostalgia nostalgia holds. So
there was a we had a big fashion show one year to unveil some new uniforms, and all of us in the front office absolutely loved the new uniforms, but we had seen them for months.
Yep.
We saw the design process, we saw what the eventual product was going to be, we had the whole fashion show planned out, and we were so excited to reveal them. And that night that they were revealed, we got a lot of backlash on social media from fans who did not like them at first. And it was pretty disheartening to those of us, you know, who loved the team and loved the brand and loved the uniforms. But it only took, you know, a few days to a week before people started to turn around their opinion and were like, you know what, these aren't so bad. And then eventually it was, I really like these uniforms.
Yeah, exactly.
And now people love them. So it is funny that fans are very protective of their brand and their memories, and it all goes together in what it means to be a fan, that you love the team and the look and the colors and everything about it. And if you try to mess with that, it's almost like you're messing with their their history as a fan or their pride in their team and their players. And sometimes it does take them a while to realize that, hey, maybe this change isn't a bad thing and actually could be a good thing and result in some good new merchandise and clothes that you can wear out in public.
Exactly. And in 5 years' time, it'll be the top retro jersey of Suns all
the time. That's right.
Exactly. Like, you know, that's the thing. It's maybe someone should just launch a new jersey to say, this is going to be the best retro jersey you're going to own in 10 years' time. And just let's just accept it.
I like that.
Just accept it. So where can you've been very busy with the Super Bowl, but where can people find you, connect with you? How can they connect with you online?
Sure, absolutely. They can follow me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is the same on both, at Jeremy, J-E-R-A-M-I-E. On Facebook, my name is Jeremy McPeak, my full name. Haven't been able to wrestle away my first name on Facebook yet, but would love to connect with people on any of those channels or LinkedIn as well. So I love connecting with like-minded people and sharing different ideas, and always enjoy all of your posts and blogs and content that you share on LinkedIn, and love to get that from other people too. So, please, I invite everybody to reach out and connect with me. It'd be great to trade ideas on the sports business and social media with you throughout the year.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, Jeremy.
Of course. Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we finally connected after a few years. And did you have some final questions for me?
I did. You've gone and wrapped me up, and I've forgotten the closing five. How good am I going?
I've listened to your podcast, so I was a little disappointed you were going to end it right there.
I was. I'm now scrolling down. So I'm going with the closing Sports Geek closing five. What was the first? Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I was a kid, and it was a Phoenix Suns game. I grew up here in Phoenix, so it was at the Suns' original home, the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, or the Madhouse on McDowell was the nickname. Mm-hmm. And Alvin Adams was the star center for the team, and I remember almost nothing about the game because I think I just ran around in the building with my friends because I was a kid and wasn't that into sports at the time. But I do remember being there for that game.
Oh, very good, very good. What you would have been to a fair few stadiums in your life. Is there a favorite food that you've ever eaten at a sports event that you can remember?
That's a good question. I think there are a lot of different great things I've eaten over the years.
It's getting so good. It's getting so gourmet now. You could not just the standard hot dog or the pie with sauces you would have in Australia. Now you can get fancy bratwursts or particular, nachos and things like that. Is there a particular place that you remember to go as your go-to food in a sports event?
Well, I hate to lean back on the Suns, but there was one item that they had, and they only had it for a year. I don't know why they got rid of it, but I absolutely loved it. It was chicken and waffles on a stick.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
It was amazing, and it came with this little cup of bacon syrup. So it was syrup with little pieces of bacon in it, and I absolutely loved it. I would get it probably at least once a month. I'd sneak up to the concourse and get that before the game started, and I absolutely loved it. So I don't know why they got rid of it, but if anyone from the Suns is listening, you need to add that back. Chicken and waffles on a stick.
I'm at the moment making the Homer drooling face, so I think I'll get I'll get James to put in a little drop of Homer Simpson doing bacon, because that sounds delicious.
Oh, bacon!
First thing you do in the morning. What's the first app you open in the morning?
I don't know that there's one that I always open every day, but it's always Twitter, Instagram, and email. Those are my first three, and it kind of depends on the day. It depends on the day which one I open first.
Okay. And is there someone you suggest that the Sports Geek podcast listeners should be following, whether it be someone on Twitter, a writer, or someone, and why they should be following them?
Yeah, I would suggest that they follow the Sports Biz 50. All 50 of those people that made the list in front of me. So I'm 51 on your list.
I will be making an announcement, and hopefully by the time this one comes out, I literally just wrote the list watching the cricket, and after publishing the list and getting people coming back and there's a lot of recency bias. There's recency bias is a thing. And so what I'm going to do is force myself out of my recency bias, connect with more people because, yeah, I wrote another 150 after I wrote the list.
I'm sure, yeah, you can make a very long list.
And that's the thing. When you write a list, that means everybody in the world is not on the list. Right. And so so what I'm planning on doing is writing more lists and connecting with more people and doing it in different areas. So, yes, never fear. I agree with you. And, yes, follow Jeremy because, yeah, there is yeah, – well, as soon as I wrote it, as soon as I hit publish, and I went, oh, there's all these people I left off the list. But that's,
well, you know
that's,
what? I'm teasing you, but in looking at the list, you had a lot of great picks that I agreed with, and there were a few that I didn't know, so was excited to follow them and add to my network of great sports digital contacts. And this gives me a goal to shoot for next year. So I'm happy I didn't make the list because it's going to keep me hungry.
I guess that's my teaser. It's not a yearly list, and stay tuned for more. I'm going to connect you with more people.
All right, fair enough.
So what is your, in the Kevin Durant style, you're the real MVP, what social media platform is your MVP? And I'm not accepting co-MVPs, multiple nominations. You have to pick one.
Yeah, mine is Instagram. I love Instagram. I'm active on all the channels, especially Twitter and Facebook, but Instagram is my favorite. I don't necessarily want to read all the captions. I just love seeing all the great photography, not only from my friends, but other sports media people, from the teams I follow, from the different brands like Disney and Star Wars and WWE that I like. And so I love Instagram, and I love Instagram stories now that they've added that. I think that's a fun new part of their app. So that's definitely my MVP.
Oh, that's very good. Instagram stories is something that it's on my list to do more of in 2017. And it's an Instagram overall. I'm sort of putting more effort into Instagram. I've been loving your throwback Thursdays on Instagram.
I had 24 years worth of throwbacks to go through. So
never has the phrase fresh faced been more applicable than you when you were starting at the Suns. You do look like you were about 12 when you started at the Suns, and you're very. It's good because in internet years you can appear much younger.
That's right.
When you're older, they go, "I can't believe you're that old." It's like, yes, I'm much younger on the internet. It's a trick that I do, Jeremy, and I think it's one that you'll be able to do for another 10 years. Yeah, we'll definitely link to some of those throwback Instagrams in the show notes of you with. The Suns in the 90s, but some absolute. I think you were sharing ones of your trip to NBA in internationally. Was it Spain that you were sharing?
Italy and Germany. Yes.
Italy and Germany. That's right. Yeah. So terrific. So follow them, Jeremy. That's Jeremy with an IE, not a Y. If you are looking for Jeremy, thank you very much for coming to the podcast. Thank you very much for pulling me up to make sure we got to the closing five. But you're almost better at this podcast thing than I am.
Thank you, Sean. It was great talking to you, and it's been a lot of fun, and would love to do it anytime.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Jeremy. Remember, that is Jeremy, Jeremie, on all platforms. He's done very well to change his handle that many times. So just where we finished up there, what do you think? How would you have handled the Chargers move if you were in that digital team and get that instruction, we're moving the team? I completely agree with what Jeremy said about feeling for the people that are in the role, knowing that they might not have a job. But it is something, it's very easy to throw mud on the internet and make fun of things. But every now and again, put yourself in those shoes and say, how would you handle it? Because one of the things you need to be able to do in sports is to be able to handle and adapt to the situation, what life throws at you. And so, it's one thing to see that happen and have some fun with the changing logos. But then, yeah, just have a think. How would you have handled it? What would you have done differently? This chat was actually recorded a few weeks ago before the Super Bowl. So please, I'm going to be having a conversation with a lot of people in the sports biz Slack to discuss the ads, the social coverage, and I'm sure Jeremy's awesome work on the Snapchat stories and Instagram stories. That's how confident I am of what Jeremy can do. So please come in, join us in the sports biz Slack. Sportsgeekhq.com/Slack is the way that you can join us. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to SportsGeekHQ.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.